So first of all, I would like to thank the EISB and the Journal Accounting and Finance for providing us the opportunity to present this paper. So this paper is co-authored with Ronita Ram from Henley Business School and Pedro Moraya Barros. Both are here in the presentation as well. So first, what I would like to explain is why do we do this research and what do we hope to learn from this research? We see that since 2008, the World Bank, when they provide loans to countries, they also apply this good governance program, which asks companies to also adopt IFRS standards. So since 2008, we see an increased adoption across countries of IFRS standards, not only for listed firms, but also for private firms reporting. The World Bank in its document states that she hopes that this adoption of IFRS will increase lenders' trust and therefore also increase growth in those countries because it will facilitate lending. If we look at the mission statement of the IFRS Foundation, we see that the IFRS Foundation claims that IFRS could serve as a trusted language. And so we ask, well, can it also serve as a trusted language in the context of private firm reporting, because IFRS is now also applied for or adopted by countries for private firm reporting. Since we see an adoption worldwide of IFRS and IFRS for SMEs for private firm reporting, we ask, well, will institutional characteristics influence lenders' trust in these different countries? So these are kind of, say, policy-inspired research questions that we want to answer. But also, if we look at academic research, there are calls for research to better understand whether IFRS provides useful information for lending decisions and whether also, like for listed firms, institutional characteristics play a role. So what I will do in the next 20 minutes of this presentation, first of all, I will introduce you to the research propositions we have developed to guide our analysis. After that, I will present the research method we followed, and then I will discuss the results and pay some attention to the conclusions of the paper. So we follow as a guidance for our research institutional theory, because institutional theory already has proven very useful to understand country differences. And also, if we look at DiMaggio and Powell, institutional theories looks also at coercive mimetism and normative pressures to adopt a certain behavior. So that is our theoretical framework. What we will do now, or what I will do now, is I will explain all the research propositions we have developed based on this framework, and in the results section, I can come back to these research propositions. Well, extant research has shown that if in a country there are strong formal institutions, then usually accounting quality is higher because, yeah, all rules and norms are better informed and will be observed. So therefore, we have as research proposition that financial statement information, and especially based on IFRS numbers, will be more trusted and used in countries with strong formal institutions. We find evidence in the literature that in a country when there are competing and conflicting institutions, by which we mean corruption, large informal economies, then accounting quality is less, so we assume that in those countries, financial statement information will be less trusted. Like I said in the beginning, nowadays, or the last 10 years in a lot of countries, IFRS is adopted because of donor-driven reasons. And so these financial institutions have asked in the context of lending decisions to the country to adopt a good governance program. In other countries, the adoption of IFRS is sometimes or is often more market driven, so that there are forces in the country that ask or stimulate an adoption of IFRS. And the third research proposition assumes that when the adoption of IFRS in a country is more market driven, then IFRS information will be more trusted and used than in countries where IFRS was a donor-driven adoption. Then for research proposition 4, we assume or we propose that when in a country there are weak formal institutions and conflicting informal institutions, that lending decisions will be based more often on information outside the financial statements. Research proposition 5, in fact, refers to mimetism and institutional logics. There are papers available in the literature that cite that when there are a lot of listed firms in a country that comply with IFRS, that IFRS becomes the institutional logic in the country. And therefore, we propose that when there are a lot of listed firms complying with IFRS, then also IFRS for the non-listed firms will be more trusted and used in those countries. However, here we have to assume, or we have to say, that probably this mimetism will only lead to higher trust if in the countries the listed firms are real adopters of IFRS and not label adopters of IFRS. And then the last research proposition is not only backed by institutional theory, but also supported by signaling theory, in that when a firm chooses a high quality auditor, probably the financial statement numbers will be more trusted and used for credit decision. So in order to answer these questions and research the research propositions, we choose a multi-country study, and we focused on the most important, or one of the most important users of financial statement information, which are the creditors. How can we collect information on whether creditors really use IFRS-based information? Well, we have to interview them. And so that's what we did. Now, first, I will explain the choice of the countries. We have chosen countries where IFRS or IFRS for SMEs was adopted either as a mandatory framework or was permitted for private firms. So for example, a country like Mexico, we could not choose because it doesn't allow IFRS for private firms. We've chosen countries in three continents, which is Latin America, Africa, and the Asia Pacific. And we've chosen the countries as such that they are different according to the institutional characteristics. For these 10 countries, we checked with Lloyds, a publication of Lloyds, on different regulatory groups, and we saw that our 10 countries are really spread out over the 5 different groups that Lloyds has distinguished. We approached the bankers through LinkedIn, and in Africa, we also used snowballing technique. In total, 108 bankers participated in our study, and you can see they're evenly divided over the 10 countries. They are across a number of functions, and more than half of our population of participating bankers have an experience of more than 10 years. When bankers agreed to participate, they received a questionnaire from us. And the questionnaire included closed, semi-closed, and open questions. We used the closed questions for our quantitative analysis. And these closed questions related to trust in the financial statements, either full IFRS, IFRS for SME, or local GAAP. And the trust was expressed using a Likert scale of 1 to 7. We also asked about the intensity of use of financial statement information in lending decisions, and then they used a scale of 1 to 4. The answers to semi-closed and open questions were used for qualitative analysis, so we coded all the answers and analyzed them with NVivo in order to detect relationships between the constructs. And these relationships we will present later through hierarchical charts. We pre-tested the questionnaire in the 3 continents, and one of the main important issues was that the bankers said you have to make really a distinction between audited financial information and non-audited financial information, because this is quite important for us. We also noticed that after we had done 8 interviews in the country, we reached kind of a saturation point, so we didn't get any additional information. So in the first countries in which we did interviews, we interviewed more than 8 people. In the countries following, we just limited ourselves to interviewing 8 people, but we used all the information that we received from the 108 bankers on the closed questions. When we do our analysis, we have to take into account that with respect to the country adoption of IFRS, we have to take into account a lot of elements. First of all, when countries require or permit private firms to comply with IFRS, they also have the possibility to apply to apply full IFRS. So all countries provide, in fact, that choice. The country adoption strategy might also be different. So in a number of countries, they keep the brand name IFRS for the standards that are mandatory or permitted in the country, whereas other countries translate IFRS standards in their entirety or with small modifications into their national GAAP, their local GAAP. So that's why we will consider local GAAP, national GAAP, if it's translation of IFRS, as IFRS-based national GAAP. Another element which we notice is that countries adopt different regimes according to the size of the private firms. So in our population, for large firms, only Argentina had a permission to use IFRS. But for all the other countries, for the large private firms, they were required to use IFRS, either full IFRS or IFRS for SMEs. So therefore, in all the regression analysis we will do, we have this country adoption variable where we take into account the size of the firm. And if for a particular size of firm, IFRS is mandatory to be adopted, it's the variable 1 or score 1, otherwise it's 0. So for the quantitative analysis, we have as dependent variables trust in financial statements. We take into account the accounting standards applied and whether or not it's a large, medium or small firm. We have as dependent variable the level of trust and also the use. We distinguish between trust in audited accounts and non-audited accounts. Our independent variables, in fact, represent the country characteristics. In order to capture the formal institutions in a country, we followed the advice of the literature that we have to look at the formal institutions that are applicable to the party we are studying. And since we are studying bankers, we took as indicator the protection of creditors' legal rights. It was taken from the World Bank data. In order to capture the informal institutions, conflicting informal institutions, we used the level of corruption. In order to know whether it's a market-driven adoption, we used the income level of the country, and we assume that the higher income level, the more market-driven the adoption of IFRS is. In order to capture mimetic pressures, we took the number of listed firms listed on the country's stock exchanges. With respect to the quantitative analysis, we applied univariate analysis, in which we compared the levels of trust and use for 2 groups. We used 3 types of univariate analysis. The first one, we kept the type of the standard constant, but the size of the firm changes. In the second, we keep the size of the firm constant, but the type of accounting standard applied changes. And then we see whether there is a difference between audited and non-audited financial statements for trust and use. In the multivariate analysis, so we try to explain the level of trust and use, and first of all, we run a multivariate analysis taking into account the creditor legal rights, corruption, log listed and the adoption status, and we control for country fixed effects. Because in the independent variables, there is a large correlation between corruption and income, we don't include them in the same analysis. I know this is a large table, but I will only highlight the conclusions. So what we see from the univariate test is that when we keep the standards constant, the trust and the use is always higher for larger firms. So larger firms are most trusted, their financial information. Medium-sized firms, their financial information is also more trusted than small firms. So the larger the firm, the more trusted and used the financial statement information is. Here, these univariate results, here we keep the size of the company constant and we switch the type of standards. And overall, we can conclude that IFRS for SMEs and certainly full IFRS is much more trusted than local GAAP. And local GAAP, we mean here non-IFRS inspired local GAAP. And so we see that for this univariate statistics, there are two exceptions, which is with the use of small firms. And there we see that there is not really a difference between the use of financial statement information of small firms, whether it's IFRS or local GAAP. And that finding we can explain later on with the qualitative analysis, which shows that bankers hardly use financial statement information of small firms. For the large firms, we also don't see a difference, but this is normal because the local GAAP there was IFRS because only Argentina had a difference. So that is explainable. This table shows that audited firms or financial information from audited firms is always more trusted and used than financial information of non-audited firms. Now, I will turn to the multivariate results and what is most important in this analysis. So the dependent variable is IFRS for SMEs more trusted and used, and we make a difference between the sizes of the firm. And we see that the formal institutions of the companies really is a significant variable. And is a significant variable in that when the creditor protection of the banker is low, the IFRS financial statements for large firms and small firms are not only more trusted, but also more used. We don't have any significant result for the medium-sized firms, but I think we can explain that. With respect to large, medium-sized and small firms, in the IFRS for SME standards, there is no threshold. We also did not put forward a threshold for our bankers, but they could refer to their own country appreciation of what is a large firm, medium-sized firm and small firm. And I think an appreciation of a large firm and a small firm is almost identical across the countries, but what is a medium-sized firm might be different. Then we did another multivariate analysis, only for the medium-sized firms and the small firms, because for those groups of firms, there is in a number of countries of our population a choice of the standard to be adapted. And what we see here is that the country variable, IFRS for SMEs country adoption, is significant for trust and also for use for the medium-sized firm. How do we have to interpret this finding? Well, if there is no choice in the country permitted, when the standards that have to be complied with are IFRS or IFRS based, then the trust is higher. Now, our qualitative analysis. So what does the analysis of the open question and some open questions at. So we will present the relationships that we found with this hierarchical chart. And what we see, so trust is established in the financial statements, driven by the quality of reporting, so that's the IFRS statements, but we also see that the auditor is quite important and that they need extra information to make their lending decisions. So in fact, the qualitative results support the quantitative results and they confirm the research propositions, except research proposition 5, which was on the mimetic pressure, but that was also not confirmed by the quantitative analysis. We have a lot of quotes of bankers in the paper. I did not include quotes on the slide. I will just include the results. The interviews with the bankers really supported our research proposition 2, that when the informal institutions in the country are conflicted, information is less trusted and used. And conflicting institutions means when there is a large informal market, so black market, parallel markets, and also when there is hyper inflation. So this is not the informal institutions, it's more in economic conditions. But also when in a country there is a lot of hyperinflation, then financial statements are less trusted and used. If they can't trust financial statements, what other information do they look for? Well, first of all, they will look at the behavior of the directors, the managers. They will look at business plans. They will do company visits. But also the directors and managers' financial knowledge is important and to trust the business plan and maybe provide a loan. Another important element is credible third-party information. For example, if the national bank in their country or credit agencies can provide reliable information, they will turn to that information. And then another important source of third-party information is tax information, but only when the tax authorities in the country are considered as efficient and reliable. So here again, we have a link to strong formal institutions. So if these institutions make sure that the tax authorities are reliable, that information can serve as a substitute if the financial information is not trusted. So if financial information is not trusted, credit is often granted with collateral, or very often it is denied. And then it hinders the growth of the company, but also the growth of the economy. Research proposition 6, well, in all the quotes of the bankers, we learned that the quality of the auditor is important, especially for small companies. So for small companies, if they choose a low quality auditor, they will not get any credit because usually the quality of financial information of small companies is very weak. If you add a low quality auditor, it doesn't make it any better. Bankers have lists, their own lists of which auditors they can trust or they think they have high quality and which auditors they consider as low quality. Then with respect to the bankers that have an experience of more than 10 years, we also ask, well, has the adoption of IFRS for SMEs in your country had an impact on the information quality of the financial statements? And in the analysis of that open question, we found hierarchical relationships in our chart with improvements of quality of reporting. We don't observe any change, and also there are challenges for SMEs or challenges for that standard to be implemented in our country. We've listed the countries where we find that they consider that bankers consider it an improvement in the quality of reporting, where it does not change, and those bankers in those countries, they think there are still a lot of challenges. So in the countries that have challenges, we see Zimbabwe, Chile, Brazil, and Argentina. Well, in Zimbabwe, Brazil, and Argentina, we also have this conflicting informal institutions and the hyperinflation.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think your shares were unloaded and we are seeing someone else's presentation.
Oh, sorry. Do you see them again?
So far, I can see
the presentation.
Well, I'm just coming to the conclusion. Maybe I just say orally the conclusion.
Yes, I think that will be fine.
Okay. So conclusion with respect to trust. Is IFRS-based financial information more trusted than local GAAP-based information? The answer is yes, and we have the evidence in the univariate statistics. We have evidence in the multivariate statistics with the significance of the IFRS SME for country adoption variable, with the significance of the variable creditor legal rights, in which we see that when there is weak legal creditor prediction, IFRS-based financial statement information is more used. Our country characteristics influence trust. Yes, of course, the informal institutions. With respect to use, is IFRS-based financial information more used than local GAAP-based non-IFRS-inspired information? We see that the level of use decreases with the size of the company. So for small firms, information is only used when it's audited by a high-quality auditor. We see that use of financial statement information based on IFRS is higher in countries with weak creditor legal rights and is also higher in countries with higher income levels, so more market-driven IFRS adoption. Conclusions with respect to adoption of IFRS for SME. We find that in those countries where there are no conflicting institutions, informal institutions, it improved the accounting quality. Bankers appreciate the more extended disclosures provided under IFRS for SMEs in comparison to their local-based GAAP. And then the last slide with conclusion with respect to policy relevant findings. With respect to ISB standard setting, when the ISB reviews the IFRS for SMEs, the information is that disclosures are appreciated by the bankers, but I guess users always appreciate more disclosures. Also, the importance of hyperinflation in a country. I know that in the last agenda consultation, there was a question of the emerging or developing economies to look again at EIS 29 financial reporting in hyperinflation economies. So this is really driven by an urgent need because, hyperinflation makes financial statements less useful and trusted. And now with respect to the good governance programs of the World Bank, there is the importance of financial education and high quality auditing. But I think additionally, the results also show that the importance of efficient and reliable tax authorities for contributing to the provision of reliable company information. Because if you have reliable tax authorities, tax information can serve as a substitute for financial information. And these were the results of the presentation.
Thank you very much, Anne. Some impressive effort has gone there in collecting all this data through interviews from 10 countries. So now I'll pass on to André for his discussion. André, you have 10 minutes.
Right. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, should I say. Right. I'd like to thank you, the editors, for allowing me the opportunity to revise the paper, and thank you, Anne, for the excellent presentation. So I have a few points. I'm going to be brief. I know we have a little bit, we are short a little bit in time, right? So going direct to the cut, I may suggest the authors to a very small thing to, you know, delete this question mark from the title, this last one, maybe it doesn't fit. Going over a brief overview of the study and some suggestions for the research propositions, research design and results, then I will conclude. So brief overview. The research question in the paper aims to address is whether is IFRS financial information prepared by private firms trusted and used by bankers, and do levels of trust and use vary with the country's context in which the information is produced. The motivation is clear. There's limited evidence on the usefulness of IFRS for debt contracting private firms, and even less in developing countries. So that is sound. The sample I'll discuss a little bit later, but I got a little bit confused. And in particular, because I read the initial version that you submitted to the journal, I believe, and I also read the revised version that you submitted to the journal. So I think you end up with 108 observations, but somewhere in the paper you also mentioned 106 and then 109. So that's something that you might need to have a look at. And you also conducted 69 interviews from various countries, which is a lot of effort, and the date of the paper is very, very rich. The method the authors use basically a qualitative and a quantitative approach. And the key finding is that information prepared in the IFRS is trusted for lending decisions. And the contribution to the literature is basically they are providing evidence on the role of IFRS in debt contracting. That said, we can all see that the paper is very rich in data, and the authors conducted numerous interviews and numerous analyses, right? But then I have some points here that may help the authors to improve the paper. So starting with the research propositions, I found myself in trouble with some of the RPs, mainly RP1 and RP2. I'm not going to read them, but it seems to me that RP2 is somewhat RP1 written otherwise. So it's like you have this main proposition, then you have kind of like an alternative proposition. So it's kind of like a reverse. And if I'm not mistaken, then the authors, they conclude based on the same evidence for these two propositions. So maybe you want to consolidate in only one because they're basically saying similar stuff. Regarding RP5, that's about the mimetism. I know the authors developed a whole framework about isomorphism and the build on the framework of the marginal power in 1983. But I got myself in trouble on how they're going to test a mimetism, because it's really hard to isolate whether a firm is doing something because other firms are doing, therefore they're doing a mimetic move, right? So it's really hard to isolate that. I'll discuss a little bit that later. Some points on the research design. The authors mentioned that they did 8 interviews in each country, and then they reached the saturation point. But then again, I think there's something needs to be rewritten, because if you consider 10 countries and you're doing 8 interviews each, that implies 80, but authors did 69, so I'm a bit confused in which countries were short or not. So maybe you want to have a look at that. Authors do mention in the text that they do not regress all variables at once, I mean, all together due to multicollinearity concerns. I got a little bit myself in trouble in finding which variables are those. I know Anne mentioned about, I think, income and corruption, if I'm not mistaken. But I think this needs to be more clearly defined in the paper and the criteria to delete them. And then I'm also suggesting the authors whether they have considered running principal component analysis, because there's some an intrinsic correlation between the variables, and I'm also going to discuss a little bit that later during the tables. I have some specific questions and suggestions for the authors, like they use standard Likert scale 7 points for the majority of measures, and use a four-point base for only 2 measures. I think they use in terms of medium. I think it's those 2 measures, but I think in the new version it's not clear whether that's only for 2 measures, or it's, I think, the bottom of table 2, if I'm not mistaken. So some clarification why different scales would be helpful to understand. There's some definitions that need improvement. I mean, point the main one, I got myself in trouble a little bit when we were talking about large IFRS SMEs, relating that SMEs are small and medium enterprises, and then I didn't find the threshold and how you define large. And that also might help to disentangle a little bit of the results. So taking back again to RP5, you didn't provide, I think you provided like inconclusive results, right? So my point here about this is I'm not so sure these mimetics exist in this context. Again, it's really hard to test and isolate a cause-effect relation. So maybe you might look at rewriting or maybe dropping this hypothesis or thinking in another way on how to present the mixed evidence that you have. But it seems to me really hard to convince the reader beforehand that you're going to find, if any, some mimetism in this context. There's some clarification about the number of observations, as I told you at the beginning of the talk. Like you can see here, it's 109, but the author says 108. And then somewhere there's also 106 observations, so that needs clarification. And I also don't understand really why the number of observations they drop for some of the variables. So maybe the authors can provide some further guidance on this measure. So again, talking about the results, they provide the results for RP1 and RP2 with the same evidence. So maybe agglutinating or basically merging RP1 with RP2 would be helpful for readers. And again, that point of RP5. Some results they find about the univariate statistics is that basically large companies are more trusted, the financial information is more trusted for large companies than medium companies, than small firms. But then I don't know what is the threshold of large and medium. So I got a little bit confused on how you define those kind of firms. And then this might help to explain why you don't find significant results when you're doing the multivariate analysis. Like for trust large and use large, you don't find any significant results, not neither for medium. But according to the univariate results, they should be the ones to be most trusted, right? So maybe you should look at the variation of the dependent variable. I don't know how many large firms are there. I know the N here is 90, but how many are ones? Then you could be only 10 or 5 or 8. Then when you regress, you have a problem of finding some statistic results there. So maybe it's helpful to have a look on that. So the results you find on the quantitative part are more sound with the ones you find on the qualitative part. And then a small issue here is that you mentioned the table 6 under brackets, the Z statistics are in parentheses, but I think it's not, it seems standard error. So you might have a look at that. While I talked about PCA, principal component analysis, the authors don't define what is country effects. I think during the presentation, Anne told us that this country fixed effects, but then legal rights and corruption, they also capture a little bit of these effects, and maybe they are mixing the effects. So maybe running a principal component analysis, or maybe having just one variable, let's say country fixed effect, considering that legal rights and corruption are somewhat more constant over time, will help to clarify a little bit of the results. Because at some time, at this point now, you can see that the legal rights coefficient is negative, indicating that the stronger the legal rights, the less trusted are the financial statements, which is a little bit counterintuitive and contradictory. So maybe having a look on these other measures on how to refine this quantitative part may help the authors. So to conclude, I think some of the RPs need to be rewritten, as I told you. More discussion on the quantitative part of the study is needed, mainly to make it more sound with the qualitative part. That said, I think the study is really relevant to the literature. The authors conducted a really hard job in collecting data for all these interviews. And there's a clear contribution with a key implication for the study setter. So I conclude by saying I hope this review helps the authors refine their paper. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andre. And now we'll hear from Bruce. Bruce, you have 10 minutes.
Thank you very much. I'm hoping, can you all see my slides?
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much. And thank you very much, firstly, just to the authors for the paper. I think any research that is done into the work of the ISB is always very much appreciated on the basis of helping us do what we do. I think just by way of introduction, I mean, a lot of the information I normally see is generally focused on publicly accountable entities and developed first world economies. So it was really nice to get some feedback in terms of private entities and of course, the two frameworks that we've got in terms of IFRS and IFRS for SMEs. That was great. In addition, it was great to see that a focus in terms of the more developing areas. So obviously, my area coming in from Africa, Asia Pac, and Latin America, I think it's important to get that. And it was good to see a good stretch of bankers, especially getting the bankers to get involved. I know from experience, sometimes getting bankers to be involved in doing these type of things, especially in developing nations, is very difficult. So I must commend the authors on that. Just to give you some of the comments I've got, and just to start off and point out that I'm not an academic in any way, so I'm not going to comment on a lot of the things that Andrea took a look at and things. But I guess what I looked at was from my point of view, what are the things I found useful? What are the things I think that add a value in terms of what we're doing? To start off with, I think it's always good to get a confirmation, so to speak, that obviously IFRS and IFRS for SMEs are superior to local non-IFRS-based GAAP. And I think that's important for us to continually hear that people are seeing us as the gold standard, as what people can use in terms of improving financial reporting in any country. And I do think that's important message for us to take out of this, especially for developing economies, where you know a lot of these people don't have the experience or even the finances to go and set up their own standard setters to go through the rigorous process of doing that. It's good to see that we're providing an alternative that is an improvement generally on what they may have done there. What I did think was interesting was just to try and break that down a bit more. So firstly, I would have been quite interested in knowing of what you looked at in the countries where both IFRS and IFRS were available, and the IFRS for SMEs were available to private entities. What percentage was the take up? So how many private entities generally took up the SMEs where they had that option as opposed to using full IFRS? I also thought it was quite interesting when we were talking to the bankers, for me would have been to find out, do they find IFRS more valuable than IFRS for SMEs? And at what point do they see that? So is it when they get to a certain size? Is it a level of borrowings? What are the things that would impact them in terms of one framework versus the other? And I guess the one thing to me that maybe just kind of when I read the title of the paper, I would have been very interested in understanding how that impacts on the cost of borrowing. So, you know, if I'm using IFRS or I'm using IFRS for me, does it end up costing me more? If I'm using local GAAP, does it cost me more? The reason I thought that was interesting was because when I talk to countries who haven't adopted IFRS for SMEs, for example, it's useful to be able to say to them, look, there's actually a genuine cost to the company in terms of using one versus local GAAP, for example, or for IFRS for SMEs. So I think understanding that kind of bit more on the credit, a little bit more on the cost of borrowings, probably would have been quite useful for me. I guess the other thing I looked at in my mind was, I mean, if I just take a look at this, sorry, I like pictures. If I kind of look at this graphic, I mean, at the top, we've got what the gold standard. And I think that we kind of, as I said, that was confirmed for us. If you're using IFRS, you're in a strong regulated environment and there's a great auditor behind that, we know that that's the gold standard. And I think when I get to the bottom and I understand, look, you're right, if I'm using a local GAAP, there's very weak regulation, even if there is regulation, and the audit is untrusted. I understand, obviously, that there's no impact there. But I guess to me, it was kind of understanding a bit of that middle area. So what, for example, the factors that you've put out in figure one to the paper, do they weight those? What are the things that would be important? And to me, what would have been quite interesting is understanding for private companies, what would the roadmap look like? Or what would the roadmap look like in terms of the challenges at the bottom and the gold standard at the top? So what are the things they should work on in order of ranking? Because I think just giving them a shopping list and saying you need to address all of these things to get more faith in your private company accounts, I think is a bit challenging. So it would be interesting to maybe just understand a little bit more what are the major things that the bankers see impacting in terms of their credit decisions, and what are the things that they go, look, these are nice to haves, but we could kind of live with those a bit more. So to me, it was understanding that middle area, that gap between the two that we had there. Now, just looking at some of the other things that I thought were quite interesting. Firstly, when we spoke about the additional information, I think, yes, it is important to understand that there is the use of additional information in lending decisions. Maybe for me, it was maybe unpacking that a little bit more. So you cited that we need obviously information on the owners, directors, and managers, etc., and obviously the way they look at the business. What are the actual elements in management commentary that they would need in terms of making those decisions? And I guess maybe just not try and extend the scope what you do, but it would be interesting for us, obviously, as we look at our management commentary that's out, our management commentary exposure. You know, are we covering off the things that the people are looking for in terms of what could be in there that are necessarily in the financial statements for them? The second thing I thought was very interesting was obviously a big focus on tax information. And I think this was also commented on in the earlier paper as well, where tax information, where there's no trust in the financial information, they use tax information. Now, in some of the countries I've been involved in, the IFRS or the IFRS for SME information that they prepare is used as the basis for the tax information. So I guess that would have been interesting to understand, is that is there a correlation where IFRS or IFRS for SMEs is used for the tax authorities and where it's not? Because from my experience, there's been a little bit more rigor around the financial reporting when the same numbers and the same information is submitted to the tax authorities. So I think that to me would have been a very interesting link to understand. Because maybe what we ended up doing, what I've seen, is that we get indirect regulation of the financial reporting by the tax authorities. Not that that's their aim, but the fact that they obviously using it and they're a bit more studious of some of it. So I think that link would have been interesting to potentially understand. I also think a lot of we've spoke a lot about the quality of auditing, and obviously high quality auditing is cited as a major factor in acceptance of financial reports. I guess what I was interested in is, well, what do you deem to be a low quality auditor? And I guess when I try and look at the quality of audits, I know a lot of people distinguish it between, well, we've got the big four, then the mid tier, then the small auditors, but we have countries in some jurisdictions where even big four auditors have been disqualified from doing audits because their audits weren't deemed to be high quality. So the question to me was, are there factors around what we consider to be a low quality auditor? Because I know in certain countries, I mean, I've dealt with some small firms and some medium sized firms, the quality of their work is excellent. And I guess it'd be interesting to understand, is this just a factor of having a big four brand attached to your audit? Or is it actually the quality of the actual work that they're doing? Now, and I appreciate that this paper wasn't going into auditing, but I think just that we've cited this as a major factor, to me, it was interesting to understand how those potentially impacted on each other. The also thing I was quite interested from financial reporting point of view was understanding the reasons for the low quality audit. Is it just that they find the standards are too complex, for example, or is there just no education in the market? And maybe I've got a bit of an ulterior motive and maybe understand the second one of that, because I think when I start looking at education in the market, the question comes in, is it something we as a standard setter should consider needs to be looked at, or we need to encourage in those markets on the adoption? So maybe just an understanding a little bit on the auditing there. On the adoption, one of the challenges that was mentioned when we looked at Zimbabwe was that there's no strong regulation of the private companies, and that was cited as a challenge on the adoption of IFRS for SMEs. I guess what I was interested in knowing was, did the same apply to private companies applying full IFRS? So I appreciate maybe that's the challenge that the SMEs are facing, but I mean, if there's no strong regulation of private companies, is that just unique to the SMEs? Or is the non-regulation also impacting on the quality of the IFRS? So just kind of breaking that down maybe a little bit more in terms of what that was. And then once again, also the adoption education once again was cited. And I think from my point of view, it was understanding whether or not, we're trying to understand whether we have a role to play in that. And is it just something around the quality of what people are putting out? So all in all, just some of the takeaways I've got. Yeah, it's positive to see here that IFRS is seen as the gold standard. And I do appreciate that there are limitations imposed by the local markets that obviously we as the standard setter can't look at. But I think it's good to know that it's good to see from the paper that where the environment is good and supportive, the standards are having quite a big impact. I also think it's positive to hear that you did in some countries see that the SME standard did create an improvement from local gap. I think what was quite interesting for me just in terms of that would maybe also to flesh out a little bit the situation in South Africa. In South Africa, a lot of the private companies were previously using I4S, or what we called SAGAP, which is effectively I4S. And they moved from that into using SME. So it wasn't necessarily a step up for them. It was almost a step down in that they weren't giving as many disclosures now. They were using a more limited framework. I guess it'd be interesting to see whether they felt that there was a decrease in terms of that. So maybe had they had the step down impacted on the cost of borrowings for those people. I do think if possible, it's obviously value in exploring some of those issues. I am always appreciate that the papers you put together got summaries, but I think it would be good for us to understand a bit more of the impact of these. The one other comment I just want to finish off with was, to me, a lot of the information was given around the reporting for private companies. I guess in a lot of those factors we discussed, I'd be quite interested in hearing kind of where were those impacts, where did the impact greater on IFRS for SMEs, and where did the impact greater on full IFRS? So maybe just a bit more of a distinction between the results in terms of full IFRS and SMEs would help us understand the impact of those. Other than that, I want to say thanks again to the authors. I think I'm bang on 10 minutes, so I won't keep Anna concerned about time. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruce, for your wonderful discussion and also for keeping to the time. Now, we are running a bit behind, but while Anne thinks about the comments, I will invite Umesh to give a concise, to address the comments that he received in a concise way.
Thank you, Anne. The question in your interview with the bankers, is it other information took a higher priority? Since you mentioned limited use in slide 8 for the lending purposes other than reliance on financial statements. Yes, I think what the bankers were saying was they weren't quite confident about the financial statements produced by some of the smaller entities, and possibly they like to look more at the internal information. So that's there. And the next one is something about the CSC, and I just got information
Umesh, I was going to invite Michelle to ask her question because she's a member of the technical project team at ISB that works on that. But before that, if you wanted to address any of the comments that were given to you in the discussions, please do.
For the discussion, I would like to thank both the discussion, Helen and Tadu. I think they did marvelous work, and the comments were great. And I agree with most of the comments. Helen said that there needs to be a greater alignment title with the research question. I think there was some mention of referring back to IFRS SME 2.2 to 2.3. She talked about research methodology. And the time period, I think we can include all those in the revised version of the paper. So they are very constructive comments. And the comments from Tadi was very good. So we'll take most of them on board. Yeah. Thank you for the comments.